Season 4, Episode 1, Honey, You're Ruining Our Kid is back with me, Jarlath Regan, and...
me, Tina Regan.
Tina Regan.
We took a long break.
We took a long break, but if you're joining us for the first time, this is the Honey, You're Ruining Our Kid parenting podcast, where everything is in play. Doesn't matter what you are experiencing with your little darling. Tina, my wife, the behavioral expert and brains of the operation here, will have seen what you're going through and worse. So you email in anonymous your situations and she comes up with a strategy which will work for you. And if that strategy doesn't work, she'll find another one.
Yeah.
And the mail bag is bulging, Tina.
It is. And we nearly didn't come back this time because a lot of the podcasts have been put on pause.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm, to be honest, I was getting a little bit overwhelmed trying to keep up with everything and all the questions. And then over the summer, we kept bumping into people going, when's the podcast back? And I'd be like, are you? Do you?
Yeah. Tina's always flabbergasted when people like the podcast.
And it kept happening. And in Electric Picnic, it was like a lot of people. Mm. And I was like, okay. Maybe we should give this another go.
Well, I always think the people that listen to this show are connected to it in a way that other people aren't to other podcasts. Because in a lot of situations, and I read the mails that Tina won't read out to you guys because she gets too embarrassed, she's taken people from situations where they really had lost hope. They really thought that there isn't a chance that we're going to get through this behavior. I guess I'm just going to have a child that sleeps in the bed with us.
Yeah.
Or won't eat anything but sausages and chips. And you found a way. Even this past week, we had someone on who will obviously remain anonymous, who Tina took the time to figure out a bedtime situation that really was extreme behavior. And out the other side of it, they're now got some normality back.
Yeah, but that was a lot easier because I knew that person already had all the tools. Mm. They were just tired.
They were an educator themselves.
Yeah. And they were so tired. And it is very hard to think clearly when you're that tired. Mm. And I was really grateful and I felt really lucky that she trusted me enough to reach out and go, okay, I am struggling a bit here. What can I do? And in her case, it was just reminding her. And she was so able to do it. And also empathizing with her about, you're really tired. You just had another baby.
Well, that's the thing I always find with your advice, Tina. It is about empowering people to trust themselves to do these things. Because look, we're flying blind. As they say, it's a cliche to say, your IKEA bookshelf comes with a guidebook. This parenting lark doesn't. You're given a car seat and told, on your bike. It is a mad one. And, you know, the guidance isn't there. Like, people are unsupported. And that's why we're so delighted that this podcast is back. And you now have some free support of some sort from somebody
and
with
I have
decades of experience.
I have a lot of emails to catch up. I apologize so much. We took the summer off podcasting, but we've never had a busier summer work-wise.
It's been wild.
It's been out the doors. But in terms of what you just said about the IKEA handbook, it's so true. Like, I remember, because I'm an educator, and I think this happens to a lot of people who work with children, people just assume you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
And I just remember feeling so frightened.
Yeah.
First of all, knowing I couldn't really ask for help because the expectation was, but sure, you know, you've been working with kids forever. Mm-hmm. And then the second going, I don't really know what I'm doing and I don't want to fuck this up because everyone thinks I know what I'm doing. So it's really nice to be able to be there for someone else. It really is.
This episode has no sponsor on it. But if you'd like to sponsor the podcast, it's very easy. HoneyYouReadingOurKid@gmail.com. We'll figure out something with you, whoever you are, whatever your product is. We'll give it a shout out, maybe a recommendation. And the rates are reasonable. But this podcast at the moment is sponsor free. So hopefully ad free wherever you're listening to it. We are available on all the platforms. Just recommend it to a friend. We don't have an advertising budget. So just ping it along to somebody. This week we're going to be covering some big, big topics, big commonalities, such as changing school. Are you moving your kid from another school to another school? It's a minefield. Grandparents interfering. I mean, you've lived through a summer where you possibly could not escape your relatives and their over-the-fence advice for you and your child. Well, we've got the exception to that case with the grandparent who sends in an email who loves the show. And the temper tantrum.
Mm.
We are back in the Temperville.
My favorite.
Should be a whole section of the show. Kids losing the rag. Kids got a massive temper on them. How do you deal with it? How do you talk them down off the edge? And how do you move forward so that, you know, when they feel the temper coming, they know how to equip themselves and have the resources not to respond to that impulse to set the world on fire? This is obviously, Tina, one of the toughest weeks. We didn't do a back to school thing this year for a good reason.
Yeah, we had ideals.
Well, this was the other thing, too. We've covered that 3 years now.
Yeah, we have, yeah.
And if you want to go back and you're still having that back to school kind of issue, the last 3 seasons we've gone in deep on preparing your kid for going back and kind of settling them into the idea of how it's going to run and building a visual timetable for how the year will look. But this week, tell people, why do you think this reality dawning week of now or 2 weeks into the school year is so tough?
It's not just hard on the kids. This is the hardest week you'll ever have as a teacher, because all the kids have had, all the youngest kids have gone to school, had their weekend, and now they're like, what? I have to go back there. The amount of parents who won't have explained,
yes,
the expectation is now you are at school. Also, they're tired.
Yeah,
they are so tired.
Increasing fatigue. Yeah.
They're more tired than they've ever been. They're not getting to eat as much as they would like, because food is no longer just available freely in the classroom. And they're picking up bugs. There's so many new germs. September is just germ city. Most teachers will fall asleep the minute they sit down when they get home in September.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is taxing in the classroom. It is so exhausting.
And the kids can pick up behaviours.
Oh my God, that is the funniest thing. I can't believe I even forgot to say it. It is so funny to watch. Like, I was an early years teacher for a long time. It is so funny to watch another child, watch a child having a tantrum in the classroom. And they're like, they're taking notes. Like, they're always like, wow, I didn't know you could do that. And that kid has a sense not to copy that child in the classroom, but they can't wait to try it out at home.
Give this a go.
And you'll get a lot of parents coming in going, they've started to bite. And you're like, oh yeah, no, I saw them observe that the other day. Yeah, they were impressed and they're giving it a go.
Try this out. It's some new moves in the repertoire.
Funny. And that kind of falls to the teacher to remind the kids, you know, even if you see it, don't do it. If you know it's wrong, don't go home and do it in your house, you know.
Who are you talking to?
The children.
Oh, right. Do you think you can say that to them?
Yeah, that, of course
if you see some mad shit in school.
Yeah, if you don't say it to them, they don't know. You need to tell. They need to be told.
Yeah.
There's so many things they don't know. And also, as a parent, I always say this, tell them not to tell your whole life in circle.
Well, what was the whole life story being shared in circle is something that parents need to bear in mind. That these kids are going in and spilling the beans.
They're telling us everything. We know everything about you.
Like what? Like mom and dad were shouting at each other before we left the house because dad didn't know. That kind of thing.
Absolutely.
Everything.
Or what they've done to you that morning. Mine made my mommy very upset because she wanted me to wear this dress and I knew she did and I didn't want it. So why cry? Like, they're telling you exactly the motive, everything, how they felt about it. Now mommy's very upset and I ain't wearing the dress I wanted to wear.
Amazing.
They completely know what they're up to. It's hilarious. But yeah, maybe explain to them that some stuff is private and the teacher doesn't need to know. Because otherwise, he or she is going to know everything.
Tina, we've got so much to get to.
We do. It's so weird to be back.
Let's get straight to question number one and get stuck into season 4. Of Honey, You're Ruining Our Kid. I have written a book and it is coming out on October 23rd.
Charlotte's written a parenting book.
It's called The Gobshite Guidebook. And it might be very helpful to you if you're concerned that either your kid is becoming a gobshite or your husband or partner or wife is a gobshite. This is the book that you need. Look, the gobshites are running the world, so we need help in avoiding them, coping with them, and hopefully not raising them. Because as we all know, gobshites are created.
They are.
Parents are raising them. Greenlighting their terrible behaviour.
Yeah.
It's mainly the mothers.
It's mainly the mummies. The Irish mummies.
Yeah. How was he to know that he needed comprehensive insurance? That no one ever told him.
Says your man, who nearly fucked up our insurance the other day. But anyway.
Did I? Still not aware. Classic gobshite move. Still not aware of his screw up nearly wrecking everyone's lives. It's available to pre-order now from wherever you get your books,
yeah.
Including Amazon if you're abroad. But Eason's would be the place I'd recommend going, getting me a pre-order and getting it delivered.
And it's really good. And
it's
I'm
a
not
fun
just
book.
Saying that because I love you and you're my husband. And it's really good. That's really funny.
I can't thank you so much because I adore this book.
Yeah.
I am so proud of it.
And it's so nice because you wrote two books before and you were not proud of your second book because you didn't.
I was rushed into it.
You were rushed
I was told
into
I had to do it.
Yeah.
And this one is so much fun to write.
Yeah.
And there's so much in it that you're really going to laugh at. If you feel like you're alone in dealing with the gobshites, you won't feel that way after you read the Gobshite Guidebook. But I think the people who write all certain people as, you know, knowing nothing or maybe being a gobshite. And grandparents can be those people when it comes to parenting. And we're going to get straight into this question about the interfering grandparent or relative. Because this email that we've received is very much
the exception,
but
not
also
the rule. Yeah.
But also the exception that proves that the rule isn't hard and fast.
Yeah, true, true. I know.
You know, if you've had people leaning over you, going, "You're doing this wrong. Not how it's to be done." It can be absolutely head melting. You might have had a summer of it. When you got this email, could you believe it?
Well, as I read it, I was like, the relief that washed over me. It was amazing. But it's just so refreshing to read that from the perspective of a grandparent who realizes that if they come in with a foreign voice, and I mean, you know, just a different attitude towards that the parents have.
Not the nuts and the like this.
Yeah, I know. I'm so nervous straight away. I was like, oh God, I've said the wrong thing.
If the foreigners are making parenting advice now.
Really damaging.
Yeah.
And it can take
an outside voice.
An outside voice can
when you're trying
do
to keep your
so
line.
So much damage. And really what it damages most is the respect your child has for parental voice.
Yeah.
Because they are seeing in real time, don't have
you're
to
not,
listen to you.
You're not the law.
You're not the law. Oh, well, there's another version of that.
Yeah.
So not okay to do it.
So this is what they write. Hi there, Tina and Jareth. Love the podcast. Thank you very much. Such great parenting advice. How I wish I had you to listen to in the trenches back in the day. Whilst my children are grown up and have flown the nest, well, all but the last one who is 22, and having seen just about every topic you've covered firsthand and survived and thrived in 30 plus years of parenting, I can attest to the fact that despite every up and down and upset, seemingly impossible situation, they all have become truly wonderful, kind, gentle, and loving adults. So a ray of hope there to start this thing off. And I surround myself with them wherever I can. And we love to spend time together, chatting, game nights, etc. Proof positive that it all comes good in the end.
Aww,
and definitely.
What a lovely email. Honestly,
it really is.
Is she even a grandparent? I feel like maybe I read this wrong.
30 plus years.
Maybe. Let's keep going.
Just one little defense, and it's of us as grandparents.
Okay.
Yeah. I really hope I never judge or undermine my kids' parenting skills and try to provide a listening ear, a temporary relief, and sometimes even some helpful advice. Sadly, my grandchildren live in Australia, so I do reserve the right to spoil them for a couple of weeks
of
course, a year. I see them and pack in memories for me and for them. I'm not their mom, but I am a mom, and lots of knowledge and patience. And as a grandparent, we get to right the wrongs we did with our own children and treasure the magic of these little people second time around, whilst learning to navigate the world of grown-up children. I've done a few reels about this.
It's
patently obvious.
I think this lady's a fan of this.
Yeah, a couple of reels about who are these people that are the grandparents. Of course that they can ride their bikes in the house. The wheels are clean. We understand the point of keeping on the same page, respecting their routines, as I'm sure most grandparents do.
No, you don't.
You do not. But the relationship is very important and indeed a necessary one for the kids and for their often frazzled parents. Something to be treasured, and I would have hoped. We were where you are. It really does take a village. Anonymous,
And that's lovely, isn't it?
Isn't it? Like, it's a heartening email, but it also throws up exactly the challenges. She's so aware of the problem. And maybe she's not telling us the full story, which is maybe she made those mistakes.
But also, in the same way that we say that we're all trying to do a new type of parenting, we have to be willing to acknowledge that there could be a whole generation of grandparents now who are trying to do
a whole different type of grandparenting.
I mean, being conscious of it at all is amazing, because that's where the conflict comes up, isn't it?
Yeah.
When you can't get through to them that you're trying something different and you just need them to be on board, you know?
Well, especially if you're living with them. And there's a lot of people. We're in a housing crisis. There's a lot of people who are living with their grandparents or relatives.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no escape. There is no avoiding it. And like you say, the undermining of the law or the constitution of your family is constant.
And I sometimes think the grandparents who get too involved are forgetting that you're missing out on the friendship you could have with the kid. They don't need another parent. They've got two.
Mm.
Step back and enjoy the companionship of the kid.
But equally, I think plenty of these grandparents are just trying to be the pal.
Yeah.
They're like, well, I was the hardline dictator back in the day, and now I'm going to be their friend.
Yeah, but there's nothing wrong with that if they're not getting involved in the parenting.
Oh, you're terribly hard on
them. Yeah, that's where it gets tough.
Those children are only young ones.
Do you know the worst one that I have? I have a good friend who lives in England. And the worst thing is, her mother listens to this podcast. And she says, and her mom has told me, it's very funny, that the interference she gets in her parenting is, well, what would Tina say?
Oh, holy Tina.
And what would Tina do? And like this woman,
how annoying.
This very annoying. I felt awful. But this woman is truly one of the kindest people I've ever met. Her mother is lovely too. But I felt so bad. But at least she was able to laugh about it. And they were laughing about it together. But I was like, oh my God.
But like I'd say, Tina, let me put this to you. Because obviously this is a really positive email.
Yes.
There isn't really a question contained in it. But I had a few questions off the back of it. And for starters... when you're being undermined, when a parent is listening to this going, yeah, this is all very well and good, but when it's happening, what should you do? Is there a way of going, preparing the child on the way in to visit the grandparents that I'm the boss, don't mind what they say. Now, if you have a problem.
This is why it's so hard. Because that kid knows feckin' well that you are screwed the minute they go into that house.
Yeah.
That kid's looking at you going, yeah, you're the boss, aren't you?
They're going to the Cayman Islands where tax law doesn't apply.
Oh, really? You're the boss?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Granny says now.
Granny seems to be able to tell you what to do. it's really hard.
Yeah.
And we're not equipped yet to be able to talk these things out, really. Like, we're not that Americanized yet. And you end up having rows with your own parents about, can you please respect my parenting?
And worse, you end up not going over it. Here's the next one I had on this, and that is, we're in a time where there's much better understanding of what's happening with these kids and what challenges they're meeting. Their neurodiversity, etc. I hate to etc. that, but, you know, there is a range of behavioral stuff. It's the reason this podcast exists, that these grandparents might think is a load of hooey or codswallop.
It's not just grandparents you hear saying those things. Like, people are giving out the main offender, Donald Trump, but, you know, so many people have a diagnosis now, and so many, like, what's happening? What's wrong? It's not a negative. It's so positive. We're finally understanding that every child is so individual and every child's brain is different, and we can't expect every child to be able to learn the same way, and that having a diagnosis isn't a stigma. It's a way of understanding your child. I mean, all these diagnoses were there, but these kids were ignored, or, you know, they were just labeled as a troublesome, awkward child who couldn't fit in. They shouldn't have to fit in. We teachers should be able to accommodate every single child in their class. And I know I'm always banging on about Montessori, but That is when the Montessori approach is just fabulous. And we are so lucky because while they are just stealing and picking things from Montessori ethos all the time, fine.
Good.
This is why she never patented it, because she wanted people to adopt her approach. And the more you see an understanding of the individual child, the more you understand that they're taking more from the principles of Montessori of how to follow the child, follow their interests, follow their way of learning.
So is that the answer then when a grandparent or relative is like, look, that kid's just a brat. Mm. Yeah, he's just a little bollocks. Yeah. You need to be harder on him.
Some kids are her. Little bollocks.
There is such a thing as the diagnosis is bollock.
Or gobshite.
It's bad news, I'm afraid. We've assessed him and seems he's a cheeky fucker.
Yeah, I see that sometimes. I see people I know, like kids.
You're terrible because you love the cheeky fuckers.
I love them. I adore them. I love them. But because I understand that there's something's not quite sitting well within them. And they just need...
There's more going on.
They just need you to see that and help them through it. But like a lot of these kids who have behaviours and don't get a diagnosis, I mean, honestly, like that sometimes can come down to the parenting. And I know that's a terrible thing to say, but I have seen weak parenting make kids exhibit terrible behaviors. The mom is completely trying to find a diagnosis. There's nothing there. You have to step up as a mom. The kid has no rules, no boundaries. They don't know what you expect of them. Of course they're out of control.
Mm. No clarity. Up.
Get a routine going. You know, it doesn't have to be a strict household, but they need to know where they stand. Mm-mm. So
it's a tough one, right?
It's because really tough because obviously there are more diagnoses, but some kids just need rules.
Which do you think there's more of? Little bollockses or relatives that don't get that the diagnosis is real and the understanding is different?
Definitely the latter. You know, it is a wonderful world we're living in that kids are being understood more. Mm. And it is great that teachers are being expected to catch up with that. But, I mean, how do we educate these grown-ups? I don't know.
Is it a matter of sending them some TikToks, leaving them some books?
I don't know. This fixed mindset that seems to be in a lot of people.
Like Mel Robbins says, you're not going to change anyone.
No.
They've got to want to change. They've got to come to it.
They have to come to it.
Well, thank you for the email. Really great to hear from a grandparent.
Yeah, and sorry for not getting back to you this. Over the summer because I am way behind.
You're not.
I am.
Tina.
I am.
Look, keep the emails coming. honeyyourinnyourkid@gmail.com. Let's get to question number two.
So we worked remotely away this summer. We moved ourselves to Kerry for a lot of the summer and Jarla was writing a show and we were working from most idyllic place.
This
I mean,
sounds
I'm so sad.
So luxurious.
Oh, well, it wasn't luxurious.
We moved ourselves. We decamped to the west of Ireland.
It wasn't luxurious. Like, it's a gorgeous, cozy cottage, but like, it was just to be by the sea. The view, unbelievable.
The writing got done.
When, like, we had all kinds of weather in Kerry. I mean, they really get the whole shebang down there. Yeah. But one of the days, Mikey and Charlotte would go for a swim every day, and I go sometime. In case Simon's listening. Sometimes I go swimming. And there was one day when the waves were so big and the two lads were being, you were being ridiculous out there.
Like they
got in trouble and everything.
They would get told to come in by the lifeguard.
Yeah.
Come back in.
The waves were so big and you guys just love diving through them. But there was this gorgeous, I was standing on the beach taking pictures and there was this gorgeous little boy, maybe two and sister three. With their father, and they were collecting shells in their bucket, and it was so sweet. And there was a big drag of the sea, and the kid gave his dad his bucket, right? And that was it. That was all it was. That's all I saw, anyway. But then all of a sudden, this wave came in. It came in the whole beach, and everything was like sandals. All the shebang were drawn out with it. And the little guy, 2 years old, turned to his dad and said, "I gave you one job." I told you to mind my bookish. The dad was like,
was the dad laughing?
The dad was like, I suppose that was unexpected. I was laughing. I was like, kids are the best.
And was it a tantrum or was it just just absolutely so unreliable?
I knew I shouldn't have trusted you with that job.
Amazing.
It was incredible. He's that size and he's already like, my dad's like, God,
can't rely on you to look after a single book.
One job. I gave it a one job.
What's amazing is that's probably been said to him.
But has to have.
Question number three today is about those reactions.
This is
right?
Question two.
Oh, this is question two. Yeah. I've lost all track of time. Hi, Tina and Jara. The first thing I want to say, I love the podcast and I've picked up lots of tips. But I've also just enjoyed the feeling of solidarity in the sometimes very stressful world of parents. Thank you so much for that. I have a 4-year-old girl, turns 5 in December, 7-year-old boy. Over the past few months, basically since Christmas, I would say, I've found our little girl to be really struggling with her emotions. Okay. So she's a 4-year-old, right? Just to get some context for everybody. I hate to say it, but a lot of the days feel so difficult with her. I feel a bit like I'm walking on eggshells. I'm wondering how she will be in each situation. I mean, there's plenty of people feeling that. Will she eat breakfast? Will she get dressed? Will she go to preschool without having a meltdown?
Okay.
That's only the first hours of the day. I feel so defeated by the time I drop her to preschool. And I worry about how she will be for the rest of the day. I'm not sure what's happening because she really was the happiest, easygoing little girl before Christmas last year. This emailer says, I feel so sad to see this change in her and that I must not be meeting her needs well enough.
Oh, what a lovely
moment. Always blame yourself, don't you?
Yeah.
For her to be the once happy little girl she was. Here is what's worth noting. She changed preschool in September because the other one closed down. We also had a tragic loss of her uncle over a year ago. So
okay.
I had been wondering if these things had affected her. I'm sure she's picking up on our grief, but I had hoped we were keeping our home a happy place for her. I'm also wondering if there is some neurodiversity for her. She does seem to hand flap a fair bit when excited. Is a very picky eater. She can get overwhelmed by loud noises. I hadn't been too concerned by this before. She's really outgoing, social, and I'd been so happy in herself. But now with all the emotional outbursts she's having, I'm thinking, should I be looking at an assessment for her in case I'm missing the bigger picture? Her preschool teacher called me back last week to say she'd noticed she'd been different in her, she'd seen a difference in her behaviours this term compared to the first term.
So it's at school too, okay.
Yeah, she said she's not the happy, energetic girl she was before Christmas. It makes me so sad to hear that.
That is worrying if it's at home and at school.
Right, so then this parent is reflecting on her own response as well, which is really important too, obviously, because no child is an island. I stay calm 99% of the time, she says. When she's flying off the handle, I try to see it from her point of view. For example, when she's having a meltdown about brushing her teeth, I wait until she calms.
Brilliant.
Then I get down to her level, which is all the stuff that Tina's been advising you guys to do for ages. Then I get down to her level and I explain that we all must brush our teeth to keep them healthy. And it's my job to keep her safe and healthy.
Very good.
I try to respect her feelings, actively listen, acknowledge what she's saying while trying to also be firm on things that keep her safe and healthy. But I feel like everything is a battle. I get so drained by it. Her dad has more of an authoritarian parenting style, and I suppose we should really be working together on being consistent between us with how we communicate with our kids. I just feel a bit lost at the moment as a parent, and I feel like I just can't do it right. My plan is to try and give her more one-to-one time playing, as sometimes there is a lot of rushing around and racing. Everybody understands this. Just trying to make the evening a bit more structured. They have a bit of all over the place of late. Maybe too much TV. Cue my own guilt, she says. But I'd really love your advice and would like this to be kept anonymous. And it always will. You know, we'll never reveal your name on the show. So Tina, where do you begin?
It's so tricky because, first of all, here we have a mother who's so reflective, trying to figure it all out. And also, by the sounds of it, using a very good approach in response to the behavior. But she has a point with the daughter losing the uncle. And if they're not talking about grief and how people die, this is an age where children become slightly obsessed with death. They learn how to count, they learn about infinity, and all of a sudden they're very aware people do not live forever if people die. And it can make them they can all respond to it in very different ways. Sometimes the most natural response is the fascination with it. And that can be a bit scary, but it's scarier if they don't actually talk about it. And if you're not talking about, I don't know how they've dealt with the passing of the uncle. And if it's something that they've avoided talking to the child about, it could have manifested in her not feeling very safe anymore, you know, and that can produce act out behaviors. She's just a little bit worrisome about the world. That might not be it, but kids do tend to, age 4 and 5, really become quite interested in dying and death. So if somebody has actually died in this time frame, it can impact them quite.
So just the feeling of not being that safe can produce a kind of...
It's the worry, worrying about... They're having worries about people in their life and they don't quite know what they're worrying about. And that's why books like No Matter What and The Invisible String are great, because it tells kids, yes, people die, but it tells them in a really nice way. Like it's a normal thing. Normalizes it for them, you know?
Yeah, so No Matter What.
By Debbie Gallory. And The Invisible String, I can't really remember. I can't remember the... who wrote that book?
Yeah, and you just read that at bedtime with them to start with.
Yeah, but I'd open up the dialogue of if you haven't, if you have not discussed the passing of the uncle. I mean, that's the mother or father's brother. That's going to have impacted the family.
Yeah, yeah.
And kids pick up on this stuff. It's actually way worse if it hasn't been talked about, because then they go to a place of fear and that can produce behaviours. Also, I really feel like this girl is crying out for a visual timetable for her day. It sounds like there's a bang of unpredictability and she's not quite sure what's happening next. And that can make a kid quite anxious and unhappy in themselves. And maybe just a nice little simple picture chart of what happens in her day, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So she has a visual expectation of her days. I also think she needs a next approach. Because for me, it just feels like a kid who's not quite sure what's going to.
And that's simply, okay, now we're brushing our teeth.
Next.
And next we're going to.
Yeah, so that they're never in a moment of not knowing what's coming next. They just need that reassurance right now. They need to know all the time, okay, I'm doing this now, but next I'm doing that.
So let them know that once you finish your breakfast, there is going to be a request coming.
Yeah, and I think that should be implemented at school too. Most classrooms at that age have a now and next word, because every earlier teacher understands that there's a kid in this classroom who's going to be worrying. Let's take that worry away straight away by making this a general approach to the whole class.
What do you say to the mom though? Because it does feel like, you know, she sent this email, and I always think that when people contact the show, like we are the place that, one of the places that people go when they really are stuck.
Yeah, you always think, Gerald always thinks, holy crap, it must be hard if they're getting in touch with me, a comedian.
At the same time, they know they're not going to be judged and they know they're going to be anonymous.
Yeah, it's the no judgment, I think, that makes people get in touch with us. And, I mean, this little girl might just need a few more hugs and she might just need a few more mommy loves you no matter what, you know, at bedtime. But like she mentioned getting her checked for a diagnosis, there is no harm, especially if she's noticed flapping. I mean, a lot of kids do that. A lot of kids do genuinely do that. And they don't have anything wrong with them. It's just something they start.
Quite a few grown-ups that do it as well.
Yeah. Well, they might have needed a diagnosis on them before. But like there's no harm in it, because you're just trying to understand your child's needs. That's what I was saying earlier. Like we're so lucky. These kids are so lucky. They've got parents who are actively conscious of how their child is perceiving the world. That is amazing.
That other book, The Invisible String, is written by Patrice Karst.
Yeah.
And it is available absolutely everywhere in paperback. It came out in 2018. And, you know, these books that Tina recommends, we usually try and link them in the info. But there are these incredible resources, these books that you think, how can that help? But when you're talking about grief specifically,
like I would take
you kind of have to come around it rather than straight.
Oh, I don't know about that. Well, it depends on the child, but I definitely think the more open and honest you are, the better your child will receive it.
Right.
Children get worried if they think they're not getting whole truths. And I mean, this mom could even just, you know, print off a few pictures and make a picture book of that person, and they can have, you know, leave it on the table. See if she comes to it and starts looking at the pictures. Then open up about the conversation and talk about memories. It's normalizing it. It's taking the fear away from, you know, perhaps she thinks I'm not allowed to talk about that person anymore, you know.
What about the moving of school? Because I know that that's going to be one of our final questions, isn't it? That's the other question today. The moving of school gets dropped in there. She was okay to Christmas.
Well, she moved in September, so she was okay in her new school till Christmas. Mm. But like, again, what was the dialogue around that move? Like, is the child aware that the reason she had to move school was that the other school closed down? Or was she just moved and parents maybe forgot to tell her? Now, it sounds like this mom would have told her and informed her. But maybe just letting her know that this school isn't going to close down. And this is where you're going to be till you finish. And then you're going to go to big school. Letting her know that you're not going to have that same experience again.
You know? So if we go back to question about the grandparents, the grandparent advice with a kid that's acting out in this way is, well, worst case scenario was hit him a slap, you know? If you think about it, that was a lot of them. They're coming from that perspective. Mm. But there's going to be that voice probably going, oh, they'll grow out of it. They'll just, ignore that.
Yeah.
There is something to that though, isn't there? That if your kid is having a temper tantrum, like she's already said that she does her best to stay calm. Like how much, Tina, is the first step in dealing with your kid's tantrum is showing them that's not going to work?
Yeah, I mean, that's a tricky one because they'll grow out of it can sometimes lead to kids having really bad speech impediments when they're like, you know.
Really?
You know, parents not taking things seriously at this age can really affect the kid. Like I think she's 4. Here's a mom who's completely honest. She is dealing with the tantrum so well. She said she needs to work on her emotions and it's obvious she really needs to help her daughter with that. She needs a name. Like she needs to do the de-escalation script where she, instead of staying quiet, maybe to say, I can see you're really angry about this. I'm sorry that you are feeling so angry. When you're ready, can you please tell me why you feel angry? What has made you feel so angry? And then to thank the child. Like, it's this whole thing around anger, allowing our children to feel it. Like, it's important they're allowed to feel angry. They can't be perfect children all the time, you know? They're allowed to be happy, they're allowed to be angry, they're allowed to be sad. And that way, the kid's not embarrassed or ashamed of their emotion. Like, they can't be tantruming. That's different to anger. That's acting out, and that's putting themselves in danger. And a parent has to be on top of that. But your child is allowed to have a mood.
Final thing on this, right? And I know that she probably doesn't want to talk to her about her partner. But when she's saying, my partner's a much more authoritarian style, it sounds to me a little bit like, and again, this is just me, like my role on this podcast is to just play devil's advocate a lot of the time, read out these emails and hear what Tina has to say. But sometimes I think I spot a little kind of germ of something.
Oh, no. I think at this point, I feel sometimes you're better.
Ah, stop.
No, I've said this to Gerland. I feel like he drained me of all my...
Yeah, sucked it all out of you.
Any talent I had is gone. And now I'm like, what do you think, Gerland?
Well, I'm spotting different things, right? We're both observers. You're observing kids. My job is to observe human behavior and make jokes out of it. And I definitely think that the hint there is she doesn't feel supported.
No.
She feels like, oh, well, it's all very well for you to come in and go, that's that. I'm trying to do it. another way?
That
does
is
she
so
need
hard.
To sit down with her partner and be like, can we both try this?
Yeah, and I mean, you know, you've reminded me of something there. Like, first of all, have the chat with your partner and tell him what you're trying, or her, what you're trying to achieve, okay? This mom is obviously trying not to go with the big reactions and punishment.
Yeah.
She is trying to hear her daughter, see her daughter, and work through it with her. And that is amazing. And where she has found that patience, she should be so kind to herself.
Loads of people don't have it.
Loads of people don't have it, and it's really hard. But also, this little girl is old enough for a family meeting.
Okay.
And that is also a great, always a great approach to the whole first rule of family meeting. There, you cannot get in an argument during the meeting. Everyone has to be listened to and feel listened to. That is a great opportunity to get your daughter to open. And secondly, it's a really good time to remind your kids what the rules are.
What the rules are, what the basics are.
What are you expecting of them?
We still do them.
We still do them.
At 14 years old.
Oh my God, do we? And I find them the hardest. I'm the problem.
They're really hard.
Because you're often walking.
But you're often walking away going, you'll definitely learn something.
Yeah.
It's like going for a run. You'll never regret a family meeting.
Yeah, but it is hard as the parent to stay quiet. Like, yeah. I find it really hard. I do have to sit on my hands
and
gonna
say stuff.
React.
It's going to be triggering.
But like, you know, just laying down the law here and informing the girl what the rules are, you know, is expected of you, what is okay, what is not okay in our house.
And probably the school could do with doing.
Well, the school is a great resource. Getting that teacher to work on emotions with her, getting that teacher to do a lot of family circles where the kids do open up. I mean, reporting back to the mom, what has she said? Like that teacher, that little girl some sensory room hours where she can really relax and feel like she can open up. You know, there's something going on there.
There's a lot in this answer that I hope...
trusting her gut. There's something going on there. I hope she works it out.
Yeah, well, there's an awful lot for all of us to take from this, no matter what age your kid is. So thank you so much for the email.
Thank you so much.
We have one final question, but I do want to talk to you, Tina, about the Netflix Catfish documentary that we watched last night.
We watched that last night. That's crazy.
Let's talk about it. This Netflix documentary that we watched last night. Might be a recommendation for the week.
Yeah, like we can't ruin it, but I'll never forget Mikey's face at the end.
Oh.
Disbelief. Like he was like, what? How?
I know, but also it's a great examination of mental illness.
Yeah, like course of control, I think.
Well, yeah, again, I don't want to give away any of it to anyone, but it is called High School Catfish.
Yeah.
And it is sickening on so many levels. This girl has been terrorized by these anonymous text messages telling her to harm herself, telling her that she needs to break up with her boyfriend, that
she's
her boyfriend's not interested in her.
I mean, haunting.
They're
haunting.
Kids, and these messages result in the breakup of the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, that, you know, other people being implicated in who's sending the messages. And it takes place in this tiny town of Beale City.
Yeah.
And like it's really a one horse town, two pubs, one traffic light is how they describe it.
Yeah.
And this high school gets torn apart by these messages that will not stop for over 2 years.
Yeah.
And over the course of this hour and a half documentary, we eventually find out who is responsible. And you're never going to guess who is responsible.
I don't think you would ever
guess.
You will
never guess.
Although,
unless you
that,
followed the story.
And saying that will probably make you think, well, it must be the most.
I think I guessed it, though, didn't I?
Okay, well done, Jarlett.
You'll never guess, but I did. It's a good recommendation for this week.
I had guessed, but I guessed wrong.
Yeah.
I had guessed the position the person would have in that person's life.
Yeah, in the community.
I had guessed wrong. I got the wrong.
You're an awful woman for the spoilers, Tina. I didn't spoil it.
I am terrible, though. I drive Mikey crazy.
Oh, my God. This is what Tina does when you were watching.
I don't mean to.
She'll have seen it.
No.
And we're watching it with Mikey for the first time.
No, it's when he's reading his books. I'll say something stupid like, have you got to the part where this? And he's like, Mom.
No, it is not. But like he gets so upset with you for doing it. But Tina, it's unforgivable.
I'm trying my best. I just presume he's got to that part in the book. Like, why is he ringing so?
Final question of the day. Hi, Tina and Jarlett. Hope you're both well and had a fab summer. Firstly, I just wanted to say a big thank you podcast, your advice around potty training specifically gave me the confidence to go for it.
Wow.
Because my second child, before he turned two, and he smashed it within 3 days.
Yay. I was worried it was going to be, and it was the worst advice I ever got.
That's amazing. I listened to my well-meaning mother-in-law, Mullingar
Rose,
a school nurse, basically Jarlath's mother's sketch on Instagram. Well, you're being terrible here tonight. He's only 2 years old. Expect him to be driving the car now, will you? Of course, he'll be paying rent next week. With my first child, who kept telling me he was before two, even though my gut told me he was. Anyway, Tina gave me the confidence to ignore her this time around, and I'm so glad I did. I'd also say the advice about getting an older sibling involved is great, because getting them invested in the process meant my toddler's successes were everyone's success.
Aww.
And it spurred them on.
How lovely.
So cool.
And then there's an ethos, there's an atmosphere in the house of we're in it together.
Anyway,
Sorry.
I wondered if you had any thoughts on changing schools.
Okay.
My six-year-old will be going to a different school from next September. Year three here in the UK, compared to the majority of his current class. When do I tell him? Brilliant question.
Mm-hmm.
When do you tell them about this move? And how? We're choosing a different school purely based on the fact that we think he will do better there rather than moving house.
Okay.
He's not unhappy where he is at all. He has a few friends, but my gut is telling me he's not truly settled. Hence the change. Once he's at the new school, I'm sure he will be fine. I don't want to tell him too soon and disrupt the whole of year two. However, also don't want to spring it on him.
Mm-hmm.
New school has suggested Easter term for him to have some settling session.
Yeah.
Any advice? Much appreciated. Please feel free to mention this in the podcast. Already done. Tina, you've seen this so many times.
Yeah.
You've been the educator who's helping the kid through the transition.
Mm-hmm.
Where does it begin?
Well, you know what? For people listening in Ireland, this would seem really strange. But in England, from living there, and you can totally get what the mum's doing. Like, we're spoilt here with the education system. We're so lucky. And every school is so different over there. It's hard to explain.
It is.
And that is such an important age, because she knows SATs are on the way. And if this kid doesn't do well...
SATs are equivalency test to see how your kid is, where they're at.
Yeah, and like, if he doesn't do well, it determines a lot of the rest of his... I mean, it's ridiculous. The pressure they're under is ridiculous. And the schools are under pressure too to perform well. And a lot gets lost. So having them in the right school, and it's nice to hear that she's thinking about it from a social point of view too. Even though I think she knows she needs to get him in a good school, because it's so bloody hard over there. But she's not worried
about
him.
That's fine.
Yeah, that's fine. And she's not worried about him socially either.
Yeah.
I had friends in England who would move their kid to a school, move them back.
Oh my
move them
God.
To a new school, move them back. I mean, you're being so consciously aware of how this could impact him. I would say you might need to start dropping in the idea that kids do this. That this is a normal thing that happens. A lot of kids in year three, when they finish year two, go to another school. I mean, if he was in, our kid went to a school that you started in reception, you went the whole way up. But there was loads of schools that had two buildings.
Yes.
From reception to year two. And then year three was a different building up to year six. And then, you know, lots of kids wouldn't go to that other building. They'd use that as a fresh opportunity to go to a new school. So it is something that happens over there a lot.
Okay.
I'm forgetting the names.
What about the Easter term idea? Is that
That's a brilliant idea. The school is obviously well aware that the kid needs
this. Going to be my first suggestion was the school will have done this.
But yeah.
They will have good guidance for you on this.
Mm.
And the conversation, I think, is what she's most concerned about.
Yeah.
How would you do the conversation?
Well, you need to lead it like this is a very normal thing that we're doing. And he should be, you do need to try and start informing him pretty quickly, because he needs to have it in his head that I am going to year three in a different school, and that is totally normal and fine, and loads of people do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if you, I think it's so funny, stand up. If you walk out there with a load of confidence, they have confidence in
oh,
you.
Oh, yeah, they will follow
you. Come
your
into
lead.
This yeah. with the sense of very exciting.
It's so exciting.
So exciting.
Thank
and so
you,
much
Charlotte,
fun.
For reminding me that. Yeah, you have to lead it in a very happy, this is so exciting, we're so lucky, you're getting to go to this new school. The school you're in right now is amazing, because what you don't want to happen is for that kid to be like, oh, I can't wait to get out of this shithole, you know? You know, which
yeah.
happens.
Yeah.
You know, this actually shit.
You guys so, suck.
You guys suck. I'm moving on to better places.
I'm better than you.
Yeah.
Turns out this place is the pit.
Yeah, my mom says it's a dive.
Mom's explained to me that all of you are losers.
They will 100% follow your lead on this. There are going to be times when they'll be like, can I not just stay in this school? And what you can say to them is, you can stay in these friendship groups, no problem. We yeah. can have all the play
We're
dates we need.
We're still go to the same clubs.
Of course. This yeah. isn't school you're going to fruit your tree.
Yeah.
And it is so exciting. It's an opportunity. Excited. And you get to do it because they heard about you. They're excited you're coming to their school.
Do you know the kind of stupid stuff that is going to make this kid excited about this? Is visiting the school and seeing something like cool football pitch.
Yeah.
Like the kind of, there's going to be a canteen. Or something, the
yeah.
simple stuff.
I mean,
stuff.
I think he's a little bit old to do a picture book. Like, if you're
what is he again?
He's going into year three, so he'd be going on age, wouldn't he?
Yeah, picture book line would be the worst idea.
I mean, you could do a, the school would put it together for you, a kind of picture book or journal or rules or some kind of book to prepare him what his teacher looks like, what the building looks like. I mean, in this day and age, you can go online. They might have a Facebook account or, but like, it is, everything is in how she leads this. And like you just reminded me, it's so exciting. This is so cool. Can you believe?
We are delighted.
We managed to get a place
to make
in this new school.
Possible.
And you're going to finish out your year here. And then we're going to move to this school. And we'll keep in touch with everyone. Well, maybe don't even bring that up until he does. But it's so exciting. This, I'm so proud of you getting into this new
yeah.
school.
Yeah. Okay. Well, look, I wish anybody the best of luck with any kind of move like that, because it is big. And also big best wishes to yeah. everybody sending their kids back to school now yeah. in this period of reality dawning. What do you mean I gotta go back in again? It is mm-hmm. not a cakewalk. That's the why this podcast exists. Keep your emails coming
yeah,
in.
Yeah, and before we leave that question, though, if it doesn't work, I mean, you've got to give it a while, but
there has to be that consciousness, yeah.
Don't ever say it to him, but have it in your own head. If you're not happy, we just
go
back.
Yeah.
Okay, and that's okay. Loads of people do it. Do not care about what anyone else thinks. You are trying to give your child the best life you can. That's grand.
honeyyou'reruiningourkid@gmail.com is the email address. Follow us on Instagram for more kind of bite-sized Tina tips. Whatever it is.
Charlotte's really trying to make me get do those reels. I'm going to do it.
Every time you do one,
yeah,
it blows up.
I know.
Is the annoying thing. People are struggling to get their reels to get views. When Tina does her reel, it gets shared because
yeah.
it will be simple stuff like getting them to eat or just preparing them for a trip.
Do you know how much
Garen... Subscribe to us on Instagram, Honey, You're Ruining Our Kid, to get those. Garen, yeah?
Garen Noon is so in the zeitgeist now that when you said thank you there, I nearly said, when you said follow me, I nearly said I'm delicious.
Well, you are delicious. That's the only thing, Tina. I don't know if Garen's delicious, but you're delicious. It's got to be said. This week, you can find me at the Pavilion Theatre in Dunleary. Three shows. Thurles at the Source on... Saturday. Now, all of
Source
these shows.
Is so cool, isn't it? Source. Well,
it's a cool name.
It's a pretty amazing venue. It's state of the art.
State of the art.
It is.
It's the coolest.
It is. It's sold out. Adjourn is a total sellout now.
I'm a total sellout. But we've added an extra show at the Moat Theatre in Naas, mm-hmm. Which is on October 3rd. And we're adding an extra night at the Three Olympia, four shows already sold out there. An extra night at Cork Opera House.
Mm-hmm.
The first night's already gone. Leisureland Galway has just sold out, so we're adding another one there. And we will be adding two shows in New York City at the Gramercy
New York City.
Theatre. And in
can
Philadelphia.
I just say That's something? Coming. I made Darla do a gig in Mayo, and no one seems to know about it.
The TF Royal.
TF Royal is happening in January. Yeah. I have pressurized my husband to do it because I wanted to spend a year.
I didn't want to do it.
There. They're not advertising it yet. I don't know why. I keep giving out to them. But please come to TF Royal.
You get the tickets on Ticketmaster. Look forward to seeing you at the shows. I come out and say hello to everybody afterwards. Good. So please do make the effort to come and stick around. Tina, great. Thank you so much for doing this.